Welcome to The Future of Journalism, a podcast from the Reuters Institute for the Study of Journalism at the University of Oxford. I'm Mitali Mukherjee, director of the Reuters Institute. In this episode, I'm joined by our postdoctoral research fellow, Dr. Waqar Sijaz, from our Climate Network. He is the lead author of a recent report into people's consumption of and attitudes towards climate news across 8 countries. In this conversation, we'll discuss levels of interest and trust, but also how people perceive the role of politicians and increasingly AI, and what people expect from the news media when it comes to climate change. Waqar, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me. It's always lovely to talk about the report that you publish every year now.
So it is. And I was just thinking, 4 years counting now, where we've been sort of tracking these 8 countries. And I think we consciously chose a mix in terms of global majority and minority, which always makes it really interesting. So let's pick up from last year's report and sort of do a context setting, if you will. One of the overall trends from last year's report was where we marked that we were seeing stagnation in terms of both attitudes, but also engagement with climate information. 1 year on, have we seen any major shifts? Is there something different that we've found this time?
Yeah. So last year, what we were talking about was some sort of climate perception inertia. That's how we termed it, which was basically things were not getting much better, but they also were not getting much worse. So there was a stagnation in that sense. What we did kind of see the shift last year was only in the US, where we started to see a bit of a dip in terms of how people try and consume news, their weekly consumption. This year, that change that was just instigated in the US, we are now seeing that this is no longer sort of a flat line. We are looking at a gentle but a clear downward slope in how often people actually come across climate news. Across these 8 countries we surveyed about, 47% now say they saw, read, or heard anything about climate change in the last week. And 2 years ago, that figure was closer to 55%. So we have lost a noticeable chunk of weekly exposure in a very short time. So that's one of major shift that we have seen from the data that we published.
And this year's report has been, you're the lead author on it, Waqar, and it's also been co-authored by Dr. Richard Fletcher and me. And I know in past years, we've always talked about how different some of the streams look in different countries. Just looking at this shift of engagement lens, line out for people listening what the differences were in terms of countries.
Although the aggregate seems like there is a dip in all those 8 countries or at the aggregate level, this is how the picture looks like, but it's really not evenly spread. The decline is concentrated in richer, higher emission countries like in the UK, US, France, Germany, and Japan. The weekly exposure in these countries has dropped sometimes quite sharply, actually. France is down 15 percentage points, the US by 11, UK by 7 percentage points since 2022. Meanwhile, in Brazil, India, and Pakistan are more or less flat. So this isn't a universal people are everywhere are switching off story. It is a global north problem in particular. And I think that's why this feels like a big deal, because these countries where the climate story is fading from people's weekly media diets are precisely the ones that have outsized responsibility and capacity when it comes to emissions and policies. So I think if those public are encountering less climate coverage, that has knock-on effects for pressure on politicians, how informed debates are, and for how normal or urgent climate action feels.
So just to scratch that a little bit further, Waqar, do we know what's driving the decline across countries? I mean, crudely put, in a supply-demand situation, where is the greatest stress?
I think that's very interesting, because my intuition was also that that other things would also see some sort of a dip or change, or shift, so to speak. But the data points to two very clear drivers, and together they explain almost the entire decline that we just talked about. The first driver is basically TV. TV has long been the single biggest source for climate information, particularly for older audience. But since 2022, TV is the only climate news source that shows a consistent drop. Weekly use of TV for climate information falls from 31% to 25%. And in every country where TV use goes down, overall climate news exposure goes down in almost the exact same pattern. It's like a shadow. TV drops, engagement drops. And the second driver is age, specifically the older audience. People over 45 used to be the most reliable news consumers for a very long time. But in the last 3 years that we have been tracking this, their weekly exposure has fallen by 10 percentage points. Meanwhile, the younger groups, we can talk about them switching off the news. But at least when it comes to climate change, their consumption has been steady. So it's not some generational youth switching off story. It's actually the opposite. The decline is led by older groups who rely heavily on TV, which is the platform scaling back climate content the most.
I was just going to say, Vikas, we do know this from other data, from other research that we've done about how younger audiences tend to access the news via social media. So there's definitely sort of a connection both between the age, that demographic that you point to, and television as you know, as the gateway to which they access this news. I want to move on to another metric which we have tracked consistently over the years with our climate research, which is trust. And you know, where people, how much rather people say they trust the news media when it comes to climate news.
I mean, again, this is pretty significant to sort of mention that one could argue that if people are not coming across the news, probably there are other metrics as well that are worth looking into, and trust is being one. But it's not the same story as it was with the news exposure. So trust in news on climate is surprisingly steady. It hasn't plunged in the way climate news has. Across these 8 countries, around half of people say that they somewhat or strongly trust the news media on climate. But the range is quite wide, actually. At the top end, you have Pakistan at 72% people, and India and Brazil also sitting comfortably above, let's say, 55% around that percentage point. Whereas on the other side of the spectrum is France, where the trust is just 36%. And places like UK, US, Germany, and Japan, where the level of trust in news media regarding climate change hovers around low to mid 40s. But if we look at over time, the picture hasn't changed across countries and across years.
And if news organizations were to think about who the best partners or stakeholders would be to have conversations around climate, Vikas, how much trust do people have in other institutions on climate?
I mean, this is in that sense, the story is very clear. We have a clear hierarchy, and journalists aren't at the top of it, actually.
At least we're not at the bottom, Vikas.
Yeah. If that's the solace you want to have, then sure. Scientists are by far the most trusted group, which about 71% of people saying they rely on them for the accurate climate information. So that's been, and that's been inching upward over 4 years. Then in the middle, you have got the news media, environmental activists, institutional, international institutions like UN, and even people you know personally who score surprisingly high at 56%, higher than government or political actors. At the right, at the bottom, without competition, are politicians and political parties, trusted by only about 23% at an aggregate level. And the gap between the scientists at the top and the politicians at the bottom has actually grown over time, from 43 percentage point in 2022 to 48 percentage point this year.
And that's both interesting and heartening to see in terms of the fact that audiences still seem to trust those who are sort of subject experts who are looking for more climate information. One of the themes that we were keen on diving deeper into this in this year's report, Vikas, was around kind of political action or politics. COP30 is not the biggest story for audiences, but it is a big story for those who track climate just in terms of policy changes. And we saw the sort of complete absence of the US as a country and Donald Trump as its leader at this recent summit in Brazil. What did we find in terms of this range of approaches that politicians have taken towards climate just within this year? And just as an extension of that, how are people rating the performance of their political leaders when it comes to climate change?
Well, the short answer is not well. Across all 8 countries, only about 1 in 3 people feel confident that their political leaders are getting climate decisions right. Whether that's setting priorities, making the right choices, or setting a good example globally. And more than half say that they are not confident at all. So when you see somebody like Donald Trump skipping COP30, it's not happening in vacuum. It reflects a broader pattern. People already feel their leaders are not stepping up to the climate action. And these kind of high-profile moments just reinforce the gap between the expectation and the action.
Mm. And just to map this across 2 intersections, Vikas, what sort of differences, if you could share that with people listening, did we see across countries and across demographics as well? Because we talked a bit about younger and older audiences.
Yeah, the differences do we see in countries regarding their politicians being performing on climate change are quite revealing, actually. So India stands out as the only country where confidence actually outweighs the doubt. We can talk about why this is the case. Roughly 6 in 10 Indians think their leaders have their climate priorities, making good decisions and setting a good example. Pakistan is the next positive, so to speak. But we do have the other end of the spectrum, which has been the consistent story throughout the report, where we have countries like France, Germany, and Japan, where confidence drops to about between 17 to 28 percentage point, some of the lowest levels in the across the study. The one thing is that the picture of this uniform disappointment is not consistent across these countries. And regarding the demographic changes or patterns, we have 2 very clear sort of findings that jump out. First is the age. Confidence drops steadily as you go up the age ladder. So about half of 25 to 34 years old express confidence in their leaders' climate decisions. But by the time you hit 55 and above, it falls to around 1 in 4. So the older you are, the less impressed you are with the political climate leadership. And the second and not surprising finding or sort of the demographic explanation that we get is from political orientation. So people on the right are noticeably more confident than those on the left. So the right sits in the low to mid 40s, the left sits across closer to 30 to 33 percentage points. So that partly because those who believe the climate threat is urgent expect more from politicians and they judge harshly when they don't see it. So that's what we sort of the main key findings regarding the political leadership on climate change.
Let's talk about another newish theme for this year's report, Vikas. And I personally found the findings quite interesting, which is around AI and climate change, specifically in terms of how people view AI's impact on tackling climate change. Just sort of walk us through what people think, you know, again, the variances that we saw across our 8 countries.
Since AI is being perhaps the most frequently mentioned topic across all domains that we now know. So this is one of the most fascinating edition in this year's because the public basically looks at AI and climate change and says, well, what we have found is something that in connection of AI and climate change, majority, I won't say majority, but the significant amount of people across these eight countries, the headline is that they're not sure yet. Across these eight countries, you have uncertainty as the dominant mood, so to speak. About a third think that AI will be beneficial, about a quarter think that it will be harmful. And the rest cluster in the middle, which is basically, I don't know, or it will AI will do neither, nor it will be beneficial or harmful. So the level of hesitation kind of tells you the conversation around AI's environmental impact hasn't really settled in the public mind. But the national differences are huge. India and Pakistan are the real optimists here. Around half think that AI will be beneficial for tackling climate change. France is the polar opposite in this case. It's the only country where more people think AI will be harmful than helpful. And if we just, you know, double down regarding the demographic difference, we kind of see a pretty consistent pattern where younger people are more positive about AI's potential, older people are more uncertain, men are slightly more optimistic than women, and when it comes to the ideological orientation, people on the left, right, and center all are clustered around the same level of what I would say cautious optimism towards AI's role in tackling climate change.
Just thinking about that subject specifically, Vikas, how do audiences respond when we ask the question about how they feel the news media is informing them about how AI can in turn impact climate change? Do they feel like they're being informed sufficiently?
Not really. And this is one of the clearest signals in the entire AI section, when only about 1 in 3 people thinks that the news media are doing a good job explaining AI's climate impact or potential climate impact. And that's across various different dimensions that we basically ask how AI could help, how it could harm the environment, whether the coverage is balanced, and what solutions exist to reduce AI's carbon footprint. So it's not a single missing piece. It's a wider information gap. But again, this is not sort of the aggregate story. Again, we have a lot of variance and differences across countries, as I have been mentioning throughout. And the story doesn't change much. We have the Global South countries, they are positive. And then we have Global North countries, we are more harsh in their evaluation when it comes to media's role in explaining people. So there's a mismatch. The public is unsure about AI's climate impact for sure. And they don't feel the media are helping them make sense of it. It's like everyone got handed a new tool, but no one got the instruction manual, actually. And that includes the media as well, because they are probably also struggling how they can make sense of both using it and connecting the usage, its impact on climate. So I think what we are, the data kind of says is that everybody's seeking a little help in untangling these two together.
And it does sort of lead us to a broader point about audiences and what they're looking for, where consistently over the years we found users pointing to the need for more sense making. We feel quite well served on things like breaking news and, you know, the more political side of news. Just with climate news, what is it that people say they need from the news media?
I think it will be slightly helpful if we kind of explain what we wanted to do this time around. So we looked into, as you have framed, what people want from climate news. So it's helpful to sort of unpack what we call user needs model. So it's basically a way of asking what jobs are people trying to get done when they seek out news. So it's a famous, very well-used theoretical construct. So we wanted to implement that. And to the best of my knowledge, I think this is done for the first time in relation to climate coverage. The framework says people turn to climate news for 4 broad things, which is knowledge, understanding, and the feeling, which is basically inspiring them emotionally and giving them practical solutions or advice. So doing is the fourth the need. So when we talk about users' need, we are talking about which of these functions the public finds most useful and whether current climate coverage actually delivers on them. And the findings are, I think we could say that we kind of make sense what the findings are. For example, 81% people want clear, timely information about what's happening. And similar kind of percentage want the explanation. They want people, the journalists to educate them and deepen their knowledge. 78% people said that they want journalists or the media coverage to give them perspective, which means that they want to understand the bigger picture. And at the similar percentage is they want practical guidance about what can be done. So those four needs, so the clarity, context, comprehension, and usefulness, completely dominate what people are expecting from climate coverage. On the other end of the spectrum, people do value more emotional needs like being inspired or feeling connected. But what we can see, they are sort of, they appear secondary. And the primary expectation remains, make this complex issue understandable and relevant to my life.
Vikas is rightly pointing to the user needs model that was first talked about at the BBC by Dmitry Shishkin, which was essentially mapping out what audiences need from the news. And just to kind of close that arc in terms of what we were studying with climate news specifically, Vikas, where are the biggest gaps in terms of what people need and what they'd like to get from the climate news? By extension, that means they're not getting it right now, to be clear.
Yeah, this is where things get really interesting because the biggest gap aren't where journalists often assume they are, or at least this is why my sense is. The single largest sort of unmet need is inspire me. So people want more hopeful, solution-oriented stories, things that show progress or pathways forward, and they feel they are not getting that at all. And right behind that is give people perspective. Audience want help making sense of the bigger pictures, which includes, for example, understanding causes, consequences, and context. And that, and they think they don't think that the coverage is doing that especially well. And then you get a consistent those smaller gaps in the core informational needs, which is to update me, to educate me, and help me. So even the basics are not fully satisfied. The smallest gap is for connect me. But I think it's still an unmet need. And in fact, all the needs that we mentioned are sort of unmet from the user's point of view. But I think we should caveat it a bit. A lot of people actually do not really know how the climate news industry or the news industry on climate change kind of works, how the news come about. So I would take this as sort of a with a pinch of salt. I don't want to make journalists feel uncomfortable as if they are in public or view, they are not being, you know, they are being seen not doing anything, which is, I don't believe this, but I think it just reflects how people have high expectation from journalists, or especially on climate change. They want clarity, context, and as along with that, they want hope.
And I think a good way to think about our findings is to treat it like a compass, not like a critique. And this is what we hear anecdotally from journalists as well in news organizations, which is that some of these local community stories about people coming together to do something for their neighborhood in terms of climate are always hugely popular. Again, looking at red threads is very useful. So talking about, you know, easing up the cost of your power utility bills, or thinking about red threads like housing and how climate affects that, is always a very interesting and accessible way for people to understand climate and its impact on their lives. So let's talk a bit more finally about you know, what people value in terms of the roles that they feel journalists and journalism can fulfill in climate coverage, Vikas. And hopefully that's useful for the news media as well to take away as insights.
Yeah, I mean, most of the work that we do is from the citizen's point of view. So we always try to do or embed some of the findings that can journalists can walk away with. So something that they think that they can use in their climate coverage. So this time around, we were curious to sort of classify different roles that we think climate journalists are sort of paying, at least in the public's eye, and based on their own assessment from different pieces of research that we have done. These five roles were people seeing them as educators, impartial guides, curators of the information, watchdogs, and advocates. And what is actually striking is just how the expectations are across all eight countries. More than 80% of the people say the key roles journalists play in climate coverage are important. And these roles cover the full spectrum. Not just informing, but explaining, curating, scrutinizing, and even advocating. So the appetite of comprehensive climate journalism is very strong, as we have just talked about regarding the user's need. But when you ask how well these roles are being performed, I think, again, the picture kind of looks very similar to what we have seen in the user need model. Around 4 in 10 think that the media do a good job explaining climate causes or offering solutions, which is, to be fair, is better than a lot of people might assume. Where evaluation kind of drop is the watchdog space. So only about 35% think journalists hold governments accountable effectively. And similar numbers feel that the media aren't scrutinizing environmentally harmful practices strongly enough. So there is a clear tension. I would say people think climate journalism is enormously important, as we have seen from their needs that the climate journalists are fulfilling. But they don't think that it is fully living up to its responsibilities. But this is more like a very abstract space, I would say it again. But for me, the takeaway is that at least there is recognition among people that whatever climate journalists are doing, they are doing an important job.
Waqas, thanks very much for joining this conversation today.
Thank you very much.
Our guest today, Dr. Waqas Ajaz, lead author of our report to People's Use and Attitudes Towards Climate Change. You can, of course, find the full report on our website. And thanks, as always, for listening to this episode, Future of Journalism. There will be more episodes coming soon, and you can access them wherever you get your podcasts. And if you don't want to miss any news from the Institute, you can, of course, subscribe to our weekly newsletter on our homepage or LinkedIn, or follow us on Blue Sky. This was Future of Journalism, a podcast by the Reuters Institute. From the team here, goodbye. Thanks for listening. I'm Mitali Mukherjee, and we'll be back soon.